In the studio today is Laird Close, professor of astronomy at the University of Arizona's Stewart Observatory and part of the development team of the new MAGAO adaptive optic system for telescopes. Now, first, Laird, before we talk about this new MAGAO system, kind of back us up and walk us through the world of adaptive optics and why it's so important to astronomy.
Sure, yeah. So adaptive optics is a new technique that's been getting more and more traction, more and more power in the astronomical community. And it allows you to remove the twinkling that you see in the night sky. When you look up at a star, you see it's twinkling around. And while that looks very pretty, unfortunately to the astronomer, it winds up making a fuzzy, blurry blob. And it means if you want to see something exquisitely fine in detail, like a faint planet around a bright alien star, it's impossible due to that twinkling of the atmosphere. So adaptive optics is a technique where we can actually bend an optic, a mirror, very, very quickly, 1,000 times a second, in just the right shape, so that in the end, the twinkling goes away, and you get a theoretically perfectly sharp, crisp image of what you're looking at in the night sky. It's kind of like, imagine wearing corrective glasses on your face and having those glasses change their power 1,000 times a second so that you always get a perfect image. That's the basic idea of what adaptive optics does.
Now, the twinkling is due to atmospheric distortion, correct?
That's correct. It's a mixing of hot and cold air in our atmosphere, right? It's very cold high up. It's very warm down here. Lord knows in Tucson, it's been very warm. And that leads to a fair amount of this turbulence. And so astronomers, part of the game is to go as high as you can. So we tend to build telescopes high up on mountains. And here in Tucson, it's a good example. The Catalinas have telescopes. The Santa Ritas have telescopes on the summits. And so does Mount Graham as well, a large telescope there.
And the idea is to get above some of the atmospheric distortion, the heat waves that come off the concrete and steel of the cities. And of course, it's the concept behind the Hubble telescope was to get up and away from the ground, atmospheric distortions, get that much closer to what we wanted to see.
That's exactly right. It's not so much that because the Hubble space, my mom always thinks the Hubble space telescope works the best because it's in space and it's looking at things in space, but that's not right. It's only a little tiny bit closer to the things it looks at. What's really the key is it's above the atmosphere. It's above all that blurring. And so it allows to get a very sharp image. The downside is, of course, is that it's very expensive to put a big telescope in space. So we can build bigger telescopes cheaper here on the ground and then equip them with adaptive optics and give them even better imaging capabilities than what Hubble has in some aspects.
Now, what's different about this latest adaptive optics system? What takes this beyond what we've known as adaptive optics up to this point?
Right. So this is the kind of new exciting thing here. What we've really tried to do for the first time is make these adaptive optic images in wavelengths of light that actually our eye can see. Sort of red light that you see is red has never been actually properly corrected before. It turns out that as the wavelength of light gets small, like say in the visible spectrum, what we can see with our own eyes, it's very hard for the adaptive optics system to correct because instead of say the infrared, where all adaptive optics from the ground is typically done is in long infrared wavelengths, short wavelengths are very hard to correct. You need a great number of little actuators, and our system has 585 actuators, little tiny fingers, if you will, that push the mirror and pull on the mirror 1,000 times a second. And we're also at a very good telescope in the Atacama Desert in Chile.
And now we're literally talking about a mirror that is being deformed on a minute level hundreds of times a second, if not more.
To get it to work, to get these new, very high, sharp resolutions, we need to move into these sort of red wavelengths, what red light to our own eyes. And we're able to then, if we correct our mirror 1,000 times a second, that's just fast enough to start to make images that are just like we had that 6.5 meter telescope in space. So that's roughly like 3 times sharper than what the Hubble Space Telescope can do because our telescope is 3 times bigger.
Okay, so you spent all these years crunching the numbers and doing the raw research. What was it like when you first turned the system on, gave it what's called first light, and trained it on an object that heretofore had been blurry or indistinct, and you saw it clearly for the first time?
So that first light is what an astronomer dreams about as he builds his system. And we've been working on this project for a decade. And of course, it is a very exciting time. Interestingly enough, it came at a time where we'd already been high up in the desert and working on calibration for about 20 nights. And we were all kind of tired because we'd worked pretty much 20 nights in a row and a good chunk of the days too. But it was very exciting when we finally started to see those theoretically sharp images. And these are images sharper than any photographs ever taken before by any telescope from the ground or space. So it really is, it's not a massive improvement in resolution. It's about a factor of two better, but a factor of two in resolution is a very big deal for astronomy.
Well, I know in one case in the Large Binocular Telescope on Mount Graham, with adaptive optics, they were able to tell that an object that they had observed as one object was in fact three separate objects, and it was with adaptive optics that they were able to finally make out the presence of three instead of just one.
That's right. I'm actually glad you mentioned the LBT telescope, because in fact, that was very much the Pathfinder system for what we're using in Chile on the Magellan telescope. And it's a very similar system. You're absolutely right. And we also used our AO system to look at several stars, and we turn on the AO system and they go from being a single star to double or triple stars, or in one case, four different stars. And in particular, we were able to also, because we were working at very, very what we consider blue wavelengths, we were able to work and actually see the light of hydrogen gas. And that's very exciting because adaptive optics has never worked at so-called hydrogen alpha. And it's the same filter that amateur astronomers use to look at the beautiful prominences on the sun. And so we're able to do that, except we're looking at clouds of hydrogen gas around, say, young stars, and we're seeing beautiful nebulosities and nebulae that have not really been seen from the ground like that ever before. And that's very exciting new window into astronomical science.
So what's next for adaptive optics? You made a great leap forward with this. Is there another great leap forward somewhere in the future? Or is there possibly a point where we just can't adapt the optics anymore?
Well, I think what's interesting is that you can go into the blue, so to speak. You can go bluer and bluer, and as you go bluer and bluer in wavelength, you move from red wavelengths even to, say, optical blue wavelengths, you'll get sharper images, and that's one way to go, and that's sort of the direction we've gone. The other direction, of course, is to make bigger and bigger telescopes. And right now, in fact, this weekend, we're casting the third mirror of the giant Magellan telescope at the university's mirror lab underneath the football stadium. And when that telescope is completed, it can make images even three times sharper than what we've been able to do, three times better than what a single telescope can do on the Large Binocular Telescope. So the giant Magellan Telescope is going to be an extremely exciting facility. And so that's part of the story, is that you build bigger telescopes and you put even better adaptive optics, and you will make even more beautiful images. And this is really going to open up our ability to start to directly image planets around other stars that will start to resemble more like Earth's. And that's, of course, the real holy grail, at least for me.
So will we see MAGAO installed at some other telescopes soon? And if we do, what's next for using the system? Is there any particular objects that are just high on the list to train it on?
Right. Well, so it just took us 10 years to get it to work on Magellan, Mark. So it's going to stay at Magellan for the foreseeable future, but it's going to be used for a whole host of different topics. And imaging planets around other stars is something we've already used it for successfully. And, you know, maybe I can come back and talk to you about that in a few months when those papers come out.
Laird, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mark.
That's Laird Close, a professor of astronomy at the University of Arizona's Stewart Observatory and part of the development team of the MAGAO Adaptive Optics System, which has been in development the past 20 years at the U of A. I'm Mark Dugan, Arizona Public Media News.